Hi, this is the Moving Toward Inclusive Practice podcast, a production of the Military Families Learning Network's Family Transitions Concentration Area. I'm Bob Birch, and we're continuing our conversation about cultural competence and inclusive practice with Dr. Ann Phibbs. Ann is the founder and president of Strategic Diversity Initiatives and brings over 25 years' experience helping organizations advance their equity, diversity, and inclusion goals. Our conversations with Dr. Phibbs have been focusing on five spheres of cultural competence. We've talked about seeking out stories, practicing humility, listening. In this episode, we'll talk about asking questions. In our final episodes, we'll talk about engaging with others. So let's continue our journey together. We're so glad to have you along with us, and we're glad as well to welcome Dr. Ann Phibbs. Welcome, Ann.
Thanks, Bob. Glad to be here.
So we're going to talk about asking questions. I've been doing a lot of that during this this production of the podcast. It's important, I think, for helping professionals to kind of ask questions, because we don't always get information back from people, especially information that maybe is could be relevant to helping that person in kind of a cultural context.
Right.
Are there ways that we can kind of, you know, broach those subjects and ask the right kind of questions? Maybe we shouldn't be afraid of that to begin with. Maybe we should just start asking questions.
Right. It's a good thing to consider. I always talk about how it's a good idea to assume that your audience, that your client, that the person, the people you're working with, maybe it's a client, maybe it's a community member or a coworker, assume they're smarter than you give them credit for. People can tell. They can tell when there's a lack of respect. They can tell. I do a little exercise where I ask people to talk about ways that they knew that they mattered to someone in a one-on-one and ways they knew they didn't. And simple things like, you know, eye contact, using someone's name, paraphrasing what they said, shaking, you know, you can't tell folks, but Bob is shaking his head at me right now saying, you know, he's giving me all these nonverbal cues that he's paying attention. And when you ask people, can you think of a time someone, you didn't feel like you mattered, people remember it. Mm. They know it. And so that goes a long way right there, just establishing the relationship. But we do need to elicit information, and we get scared to ask questions. You know, people will be listening to this across all sorts of areas, geographic areas. Here in Minnesota, we tend to be a little bit, we talk sometimes about our stereotype is that we don't talk about things in Minnesota. We're a little bit passive. We aren't always direct, quite indirect, as a matter of fact. And so it can push on what we're comfortable with when sometimes we need to get some information from someone and we might perceive that it might make them uncomfortable. It makes me uncomfortable to ask it. So I need to ask you something about your mental health, Bob, and, you know, how you're doing, and maybe you share that you've been really depressed. And actually, I probably need to ask if you've thought about suicide. Mm-hmm. And we have this, you know, stereotype that if you ask about suicide, you're putting it in someone's head, which isn't actually true. That we know that if we ask about it, and then if I ask if you have a plan, that's actually exactly best practice for making sure that I'm checking in with you about that.
Right.
But we think if we avoid a topic, it goes away. I mean, it's really kind of, some people, a lot of friends who are therapists, and they talk about kind of magic thinking. If I don't talk about something, it doesn't exist. If I don't focus on it, it goes away. And in fact, you know, your therapist, your psychologist friends will tell you that is not the case. So how do I approach something? And I'm going to wrap back around to another topic we talked about, which is humility. So if I come in to ask you a question acting like a know-it-all, acting like, you know, with a touch of arrogance, a touch of, or like, oh, I just have to ask you this, Bob. I've had people who say things like, I just have to ask you this. Well,
right. It's on the list.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think about when I have been at a doctor's office and I'm married to a woman, I have a PhD, I drive a car, I come in, I I fit kind of a stereotype of a relatively, you know, I hold a job, right? I'm you know, I'm not disheveled. I'm thinking about like how to describe myself. And when I have a provider who looks at me and says, I need to know, is there violence in your home? I am always glad they asked me. Mm-hmm. Not because there is, I can say no, there isn't, but because if we don't ask every single person, we will miss someone. Right. Because what we do is we think, oh yeah, that there's no violence in that home. And we know violence, right, just like HIV, just like sexually transmitted diseases, just like suicide, these things cross all manner of boundaries. And so when we can say to people, you know what, I'm going to ask some questions, they're kind of uncomfortable for me, Bob, they're probably going to be kind of uncomfortable for you, but I'm asking everyone because I don't want to ever make assumptions about anyone's life, and I really want you to know that that I'm doing this because I want to be able to help you and serve you in whatever way possible. Mm-hmm. So I may ask some things that you're not used to having someone of my gender ask you. I may ask you something that you're that you've never had anyone ask you who's not a close personal friend or someone in your faith community or a doctor. But I need to ask you this question, and, you know, I appreciate you being honest. I think that can go a long way to setting it up and letting, and like, let's name the unnameable,
right.
But what let's name what's in the room, the elephant in the room, right? Yes, this is uncomfortable. And I have people ask me this question around kind of social identity sometimes. So is it okay to ask someone, how do you identify in terms of your gender identity or your sexual orientation? And I say, for the most part, you generally don't want to ask that unless there's a real reason, but there might be a reason where it might be something, a shared personal experience of a question that worked really well for me. So I'm a lesbian mom. So it's possible that when my partner and I come in with our daughter, you might not know the relationship. And in fact, I have an older son who's almost 28. Well, when he had an ear infection, we went into the, he's screaming, it's 3 a.m. we're in a emergency room, and I'll never forget, former partner, not with anymore, but another woman, this nurse pulls back the you know,
curtain.
Thank you, curtain, and sees two women with this boy. And what does this nurse say? She goes, oh, tell me about your family. Explain your family to me. Perfect. Mm-hmm. I've also had someone say, on the flip side, a pediatrician look at two moms and a baby and say, oh, I forgot, tell me who's the mom. Mm-hmm. And in that, the mom kind of erased me because what they wanted to know was who gave birth, and I was not the birth mom. So in our questioning, in our asking, we have an opportunity to set it up as being open and accepting and welcoming and inclusive, or as perpetuating stereotypes.
Right.
And so saying, oh, tell me about your family structure. And maybe even, here's something, kind of best practice, kind of universal design, ask everybody.
Right.
So I perceive there's a dad, I perceive there's a mom and a child. I'm not going to ask them. I'm just going to check mom, dad, child. But now I see someone, and maybe their gender identity isn't super clear to me, and I don't know if that's a sister and that's a mom, so now I'm going to ask them. Well, actually, be a good idea to ask everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And to say, I'm asking everyone to tell me about their family structure.
Right.
Because we want to track that so that we know, you know, what the relationships are in the family.
Yeah.
And I don't want to make assumptions about those relationships because who knows? Maybe grandma's taking care. Maybe auntie's taking care, right? And maybe that auntie's very important to this child more than bio mom or dad is, right? So in the questioning, we can create inclusion. And that's being culturally competent.
Yeah, a couple things occur to me. First of all, thank you very much for that because that's a concern that I have. I don't want to hurt anybody
right.
by asking the wrong question
exactly.
or asking it in a way that
right.
is going to cause pain. So that was really helpful to hear that. And it also occurs to me that part of maybe assuming, and we've talked a lot about assuming in
yeah.
this series, part of assuming a particular family structure, for instance, has to do with lack of experience.
Yep.
With, you know, I would imagine in a native culture, you brought up auntie.
Right.
So that made me think of in a native culture,
yep.
we might have a lot more exposure
yep.
to that, and we wouldn't assume, oh, this
exactly.
is the relationship.
Right, right. And I'm also wearing my hat as like a queer family, that it doesn't always fall down in that way. And the other piece I wanted to mention about, I was kind of, I think, suggesting it, but I want to say really directly, is I do believe the vast majority of us can tell the difference between a well-meaning question and one that has judgment behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And a well-meaning question is, you know, oh, you know what, I'm sorry, I think you told me this, but I forgot, but I just want to make sure I'm going to write it down this time, but remind me again about this relationship, which is very different from, who are you again? Or I didn't get, like, you know, why are you here? Or just, you know, just ways, that's pretty harsh, but still, there are ways that, particularly for folks who are different and who face stigma and oppression, can the way that we talk about things can really send a message. I paused because I thought of a story. I shared that I have this son who's almost 28, and I was sharing, I mentioned my son, that he was 27, in a training. After the training, an African-American man came up, and he said, it's interesting, he said, I have a 27-year-old son too, but I want to tell you what people ask me directly when they find out I have a son. They will say to me, oh, have you been in his life his whole life? Yeah, and Bob's looking at me like, I know, isn't that an awful thing?
Is that? Yeah.
And I thought to myself, there's no question, no one would ever say that to a white man.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been in your, no one has said that to me. Have you been in your son's life his whole life? That's about a stereotype of black men as not being fathers, right? And so, you know, so in that question, he gets lots of judgment, doesn't get seen. And he said, you know, what I say is, of course, I've been in my son's life his whole life.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when he shared that with me, it was very clear how painful that question was.
Right.
And so we can I like to talk about how we love the notion of neutrality. There's not really any neutrality. We're on a precipice where you're either bending toward inclusion or exclusion. And so you always want to make sure you're trying to move toward inclusion. And if we do things the way we've always done them, and we don't think about them, and we do them offhand, they often will come out, sometimes that blatant, but often not even, you know, just, there are, again, lots of ways that I can give you the message that I don't think you're quite okay, even when I'm asking you questions.
Right. That story just makes me think so much about how privilege plays into this, because why are you asking that question?
Right.
Like, there's no context where that's important. I mean, there's just a very limited context where
right.
that question would even be relevant. So you're asking it, I'm projecting maybe a little bit here, but that you're asking it sort of from places like, and this is, again, I think a worry when we ask questions, is of like, I'm entitled to this information
from
you.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Yes, yeah. Thank you for bringing it. That's another huge piece about asking questions that's very, very important. We can, if we're not careful, ask questions that aren't about building relationship and you know, genuinely caring for someone. So, you know, I need to know because I'm working with you and you've been acting depressed, you haven't taken my phone calls, and I come in here and, you know, you're on the couch and you haven't bathed. And okay, so, you know, I need to talk about
mm-hmm.
that. But I'll give you another example of, it's not so much a question, but an example of how there's information that isn't relevant that sends a message. So I know someone who's a trans man, and he told me that he had gone to a doctor, to his clinic, and he saw this female doctor, and he had an upper respiratory infection, nothing related to gender identity. But the doctor had actually seen his file and found out that he was transgender. And so in the midst of this appointment says, oh, you pass, I would never have known. As if that had any relevance whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
So I use trans as an example in part because the asking about someone's body history, for example, I'm in a room filled with a whole bunch of trans activists, and Mara Kiesling, who's the director of the National Center for Transgender Equality, is giving a talk a number of years ago, and she makes a joke about the surgery, and the whole room erupts in laughter. Well, why? Why would a whole group of trans folks, why would they find that funny? Because they'd all been asked,
mm-hmm.
have you had the surgery? And I often say, I had my gallbladder out. Nobody wants to know about that,
yeah, no,
right? But But what happens is I need to know something about you in order to relate to you. So this is the, it's very, you know, when you think about it, it's tremendously important that you recognize the difference between information you're interested in and curious about, but really don't need to know, and the information that you're interested in and curious about and need to know in order to do your job.
Right.
The vast majority of people who are transgender identified, genderqueer, non-binary, we don't need to know their body because the vast majority of people we interact with, we don't know their body parts. Mm-hmm. But when we find out someone's trans, now I want to know your history. Oh, have you had the surgery? Do you take hormones? Well, actually, you don't need to know that. Now, if you're my doctor and you want to put me on a medication and you need to know if I'm, that's different.
Right.
But unless I'm your doctor, and even in the case of the doctor I shared, she didn't need to know anything about that because it was an upper respiratory infection.
Mm-hmm.
But we do this often. We'll do this with, when families are created differently. You know, I want to know the biology. Do you really need to know that? I want to know, you know, is this person really your biological father? Or, you know, and again, do I need to know that? Or do I need to know what this family system means to you? Those are two really different things.
Right.
So how do you identify? What pronoun should I use for you? And what boxes do you want me to mark? That's legitimate. That's very different than tell me your history.
Right.
The same thing around sexual orientation, right? So, I know women who come out as lesbian in their 50s and they have kids and they were in relationships, and people will want to know, well, you know, were you ever married, or, you know, when did you, you know, when people come out, what's your history? Or they come out as bisexual, this is common. Well, did you always date men and women? As if that matters, right? And it's not always about who you date. It might be about who you fall in love with. But whatever, it's this sense that when you're different, I need access to information. No, you get to decide as a provider and as a friend and as whatever role you're in, what do I need to know? What do I want to know? And what do I deserve to know? And at the end of the day, you always want the power to stay with, especially if you're in some kind of service relationship, you always want that power to stay with the client, mm-hmm. with the person you're serving, so that they feel in control of information. And we forget that information can be a weapon. So, you know, I've been with trans people where they are purposely mispronounced by a wait staff or someone serving them as a way to just hurt them.
Right.
I've watched it.
Yeah.
And so that doesn't keep the power with the person.
Right.
So one other little quick, you know, trick I say, it's not a trick, but it's a rule, is follow someone's lead. Think about it. Right? You know, I many years ago was an academic advisor. A trans woman came in. This is someone who most people would probably read as a trans woman in terms of appearance, and she went to another advisor and had a female name, was wearing female identified clothes. Very clear to me to follow her lead how she would be. This advisor comes running in. Now, this is 20 years ago, so I hope it wouldn't be the same way, but he comes running in. He's like, I don't know how to deal with this person. I said, okay, well, because they just wanted to pick courses, right? So I was, you know, I was openly gay, so I got this person. And the person had a female name. You know, I referred to her as her. We picked courses. It all went fine. But she knew. I mean,
yeah.
She knew that this guy was freaked out. But he didn't need to know anything about her history, and he didn't need to figure her out to work with her. He needed to follow her lead. A female name was a pretty clear indicator that he could use female pronouns, and also how she was dressed, which is what I did, and it worked fine.
Yeah.
So, and if you don't know, you can ask.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what are the, you know, and that's actually becoming more and more best practice. What pronouns do you use?
Mm-hmm.
I want to make sure that I'm, I want to make sure everyone feels seen and understood and treated fairly, so... tell me what pronouns, I'll write them down here.
Yeah, awesome. You talked a little bit about power, and when we were talking about asking questions, and earlier we talked a little bit about this. So another way to look at this idea of asking questions is how we can use our power by asking questions, you know, as
yes,
people with privilege.
Right. Yes.
In our workplace or you
right.
know, among our friends or,
yeah.
or whatever. So that's something I'm sure we talked to Liz about this in a previous episode too. It makes people a little bit nervous, but can you talk about how asking questions
yes.
can kind of be
yes.
a way into those conversations?
Yeah, I sometimes say, you know, in terms of acting as an ally or a change maker or champion, whatever word you use, you know, sometimes a well-placed question can go a long way. We are about to hire someone and, you know, I look at the job description and, you know, I say, would it be possible for a, or maybe better yet, it's a search committee and we're all going through all the questions we're going to ask. And I say, would it be possible to put on here a question about their commitment to and demonstrated experience with working with diverse clients and you know, creating an inclusive workplace. And just asking, you know, so bringing in that lens on whatever the work is. I notice on our forms that there are two gender options. Would it be possible for us to do some research on what is best practice around gender options? Because guaranteed, I mean, things are changing and you're going to see more and more people who for whom those two, two boxes. And can we also say check all that apply? And what would we do when we have someone who checks male and female, and how would we handle that? Can we have conversations about, you know, how we might, well, let me back up and say, so we had talked a little bit in an earlier podcast about implicit bias. Coming into a search committee or a team meeting, maybe you're working on a team and you're developing a project and you've got to deal with resources and staffing and all this, and you say, hey, I'm wondering if we could take a little bit of time. I know everybody's busy, but could we take a little bit of time about how we think implicit bias might play out in our process? What? What are you talking about? We're not going to be biased. Well, actually, the research shows we are. The research shows that we're going to have these lenses. And I want to talk about not just how we're going to notice it, but how will we engage with each other? How will we call each other out, call each other in, and say, you know, what's going on here? And I think there's something we're missing. A well-placed question that I like that anyone can use when they walk into a meeting, when they're presenting something, when they're working with people, is to say, what am I missing? Not am I missing something, but the more declarative that I, you know, what am I missing? Because I'm assuming I'm missing something.
Right, practicing humility.
Exactly, and modeling, I know I'm going to miss something. Mm-hmm. So. Or you know, you're in charge of hiring a student worker, something like that, or, you know, an intern, a mentor, and it's just you calling up a colleague and saying, can I talk this through with you? Here's my thinking. What am I missing? You know, I want to know if there's anything that you think that I'm not seeing. And go to the colleague, not the colleague that you love that loves everything you do. Go to the edgy colleague that you know is really smart but often disagrees with you. Push yourself, right, to ask those questions. And then sometimes asking, why are we doing things? I like the question of who fits best in this program? Like, because there's often kind of formally what we say, this is open to everyone, but there's an informal sense of we know who's going to show up to this program, and kind of pushing in that and saying, who do we really think is going to show up? And do we really think that doing it the same way is going to get a different... So if we really want to get more, for example, more people of color in this program, what do we need to do to change that?
That's an awesome question, especially for our listeners who might be family and community educators or extension
yep.
professionals. That is something, you know, with my history of extension that I've seen pop up a lot of times. Like, we have this program at 2:00 on Monday
right.
afternoon,
right.
right? Like, who does that fit?
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Yeah, and
right.
if we want...
Well, we sent out the flyer.
Right.
You know.
Why
didn't they show up? Instead of saying, where have we been? That's another question. All these questions we can ask. Where have we been and where will we go? So if we want more Native communities, are we in their community?
Mm-hmm.
Do we show up at their events? Do we show up at Pride in the Twin Cities? And there's Prides all across the state of Minnesota and across the country. Do we show up at places and say, you know, we're here just to, so the community knows us at whatever kinds of different festivals, Hmong New Year, things like that, that are happening in the community.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a big piece of it, is where are we willing to go? What kind of discomfort are we willing, you know? We're all great if people come into our space that we've created, but it's different when you start to go into other people's space and engage with them. And that's a, you know, a really number one rule of community engagement is, where are you going to be? And what risks are you going to take to push outside your comfort zone?
Right. You mentioned forms. It made me think of a story. I was talking with someone at a community development corporation. We were talking about inclusion and how we can be more inclusive in community development work. And she brought up the fact that on the federal Small Business yeah. Administration loan applications, they are loans. And for people from some religious backgrounds,
oh, right.
loans are not a thing that they are
yeah,
allowed
exactly,
to do or that
right.
fit with their religious practices.
Right.
And so using power in that, this was a little bit difficult in this situation because we're talking about the federal government
yeah.
and a lot of big change, but using your power in that situation to ask a question is like, why? Why does this say loan?
Right.
Why doesn't it, could it say grant or could it,
right.
right, you know, asking those kind of questions.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was thinking about even how on some federal forms it will require male and female.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's only so much you can do. But there's nothing to keep you when you're asking someone to fill out a federal form, whether it's online or for what's coming from your organization to say, this doesn't reflect our understanding of gender identity. However, we have to do it.
Right.
And people understand. They're savvy. They know that. But they also probably appreciate that you're saying, look, this, we wouldn't do this if we didn't have to,
right.
but it's the federal government. Yeah. So know that it doesn't reflect what we understand around gender identity.
Thanks, Anne. This
yeah.
is an awesome conversation. Thank you for answering my questions.
Sure.
And helping me be a little bit better at asking questions as well. Thanks, everybody, for listening. The links to the other podcasts in this series and any of the resources we shared in today's episode and a link to more information about cultural competency from Dr. Phibbs and others are on our podcast page. You can find it all at militaryfamilieslearningnetwork.org/family-transitions. You can find out more about Anne's work at strategicdi.com. Thanks again for listening.
This material is based on work supported by the National Institute of Food and Agriculture, U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Office of Military Family Readiness Policy, U.S. Department of Defense Award Number 2015-48770-24368.